Good morning, everybody. Give me a thumbs up if you can hear me. Just want to make sure we have
Tom. I hear you, Bobbert.
Awesome.
Loud and clear. Looking chicken.
Wonderful.
5x5.
All right. Well, good morning, everybody. We are going to fix some audio issues at some point, but we're back. Thank you for joining Bitcoin Veteran Spaces number 238. Where we talk about Bitcoin. My name is Bob Van Kirk. I'll be your host this morning. I'm joined by some others on the space. In fact, we have a guest, which we'll get to here in a minute. But first, let's look at the time chain stats for today. It's Thursday, August 7th, 2025, and the time chain keeps on ticking. We are at block height number 909,000, just crossing over that number overnight, 909,029. And it looks like the Bitcoin price is climbing slightly, just over $116,600, which means you can still pick up 857 sats for each US dollar. And today we are going to get to talk to Rob Warren from Bitcoin Park. We're going to talk about the Imagine If Summit going on in Nashville, Tennessee this September 19th and 20th. One more announcement. We also, Bitcoin Veterans has its second annual summit as well in Nashville, November 10th and 11th. And, day one will be the conference day. Day two will be the range day. So please, if you're interested, go to bitcoinveterans.org/summit2025. We're looking for speakers, panel topics, volunteers, people who just want to attend and hang out with other great people who are stacking sats. So. Looks like we have a few people here on stage and a couple others requesting, so that's good. I think what we'll do is kick it off this morning right away with checking in with our guest, Rob Warren from Bitcoin Park. How are you doing this morning, sir? Can we do a mic check?
Hey, how are you this morning? I'm doing great.
Awesome. Well, thanks for joining us. I'm glad your mic is working. Sounds great. You're coming in loud and clear. And we got Neil up here. We have BFP and the infamous Mining Goblin. I haven't gotten a chance to thank you, Mining Goblin, but you filled in pretty well for me a couple of weeks ago. Maybe you should take over the hosting duties full time. no, but in all seriousness, thank you so much for filling in so I could have a week off. All right, let's dive into it. Rob, wanted to, again, welcome you to the space. Thanks for coming on. Excited to hear about Bitcoin Park today. And maybe just to tee it up for you, because maybe some of the listeners don't know about you and about Bitcoin Park. Can you share a little bit about your story, your Bitcoin journey, or how you came into Bitcoin, and then Bitcoin Park, and what makes it such a unique hub for Bitcoiners in Nashville and Austin?
Of course, of course. Yeah, and thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be here this morning. Yeah, as you introduced, my name is Robert Warren, and currently I head up research and education at Bitcoin Park. But I initially got into Bitcoin in the same way that a lot of people did in 2017, which was that I saw a number go up and I thought, eh, maybe I'll buy this and I'll get rich and I'll go retire on a yacht someday. And of course, that's that might be what gets you into Bitcoin, but it's inevitably not what keeps you into Bitcoin. You know, you sort of come for the gains, but stay for the freedom. And over the course of a couple of years, I found myself finally in 2020, working full time in the space and working full time predominantly in mining. So doing a lot of work in, research write-ups, trying to help people understand a lot of the early days of things like home mining, running your own machines, running at different scales, setting up some facilities, a facility up in Wyoming, and then eventually working with a large mega miner running projects and ops analysis there. And then very, very joyously, now I find myself working still with mining, but more broad field, looking at the Bitcoin ecosystem at Bitcoin Park. And that's kind of a good dovetail into what's great about Bitcoin Park, is that Bitcoin Park is a membership-driven community where folks come to learn, build, and collaborate. And so what that looks like is, in practice, we have a couple of campuses, though digitally we're everywhere. Those campuses are based out of Austin, and our home base, our inaugural campus in Nashville. And we support a variety of summits throughout the course of the year on a full array of topics as pertaining to Bitcoin, right? So things like the Texas Energy and Mining Summit, the Nashville Energy and Mining Summit, things that you've probably already heard of. We also do things like Nosterville. We also, you know, very graciously are hosting you guys for your upcoming summit, which we're very excited to have over in Nashville. And that kind of extends across the broad domain of the space. So currently, I have the pleasure of working with Bitcoin Park and really helping support the membership and really the broader community in understanding the depths of kind of what we're doing in this very early space from the research and education perspective.
Yeah, that's awesome. Thanks for sharing that. I think that's helpful as we go along in the conversation. One other question. It seems like what I would say is just, you know, being a casual observer, Bitcoin Park kind of has like a grassroots ethos. Is that fair to say? Like, it seems like you guys are hosting a lot of different things. And
yes.
Can you talk a little bit about that?
Absolutely. Well, everything, there's kind of this fundamental truth, right? Which is that everything comes back to membership at Bitcoin Park, to the experience of the single individual, but really foundationally in just the broad community, the broad world, everything in Bitcoin eventually comes back to the individual and comes back to the community. And so it's one thing to, you know, dump $1 million into a marketing campaign that gets you eyeballs across, you know, the broad world or the broad US. It's a very different thing to focus on the specific communities in the specific jurisdictions and locales across the US or the world and try your best to support the people that are really, really becoming the points of contact for their neighborhoods. You know, you might learn Bitcoin because you see a Michael Saylor video, and you might get excited because there's this CEO talking about his grand strategy, and you glaze over when you hear about the billions of dollars that he's making. But Michael Saylor is not really the guy who's going to be sitting there at a BitDevs with you answering questions that you have about Bitcoin. It's going to be the person at your local BitDevs. It's going to be a local community member. And so that's something I think we should never forget, which is that that's really the foundation of this whole Bitcoin thing, not just the technological layer, but this distributed social network that's so important to support.
Yeah, that's awesome, man. And I think about that too, like how we are on X, and a lot of times we're just kind of speaking in these echo chambers. But it does seem like maybe what you guys are doing is more that community driven focus. So exciting to see that. And yeah, thanks for being a part of that. That's amazing. I did want to, you know, we have you on mainly to talk about this Imagine If Summit.
And sure.
I think it's being called the culmination of Bitcoin Park's 3-year journey. So what's the big vision for the event? Can you introduce us? Tell us how it works, what you guys are looking to accomplish, all of those things.
Oh, absolutely. Well, this is our Summit of Summits coming up kind of mid-late September. You're looking from the 17th to the 20th. We're going to be first having our custody and treasury summit, which is going to be on Bitcoin Park's campus. And then we have Imagine If, which is our sort of capstone, you can think of, which is the Summit of Summits, which is really the culmination of all the various things that we're talking about over the course of the year. And we think about it in the lens of working in AI, working in energy, working in Bitcoin, and working in freedom tech more broadly. You know, we're at this point where we really feel like there's a critical mass in the Bitcoin space. If you've been here since sort of the pre-2020 days, and you were trying to find resources, and you were trying to find professionals, and you were trying to find people who took this Bitcoin thing seriously and were really dedicated and invested to the future of freedom technology and what Bitcoin could offer, it was really, really hard to find people without looking like an alien in whatever landscape you were in, right? You know, modern days, it still is the case that we are in the minority, but we have gotten to this point where we are too technical, too professional, too serious to not be taken seriously. And so what Imagine If is it's the culmination of all these freedom technologies, and it is our summit of summits where attendees are able to come and not just have exposure to the highest levels of Bitcoin excellence, but to begin to introduce that to the broader world. And so you bring in our main partnership is with ARK Invest. So we're very, very happy to have Kathy Wood in attendance and contributing. She's been a huge supporter of our work and has obviously been a huge supporter and advocate for Bitcoin. She's coming in, and this is kind of the introduction to the broader investing, economics, AI, and freedom technology community, where instead of, like you say, kind of talking always in that echo chamber, which is easy to do if you're on X or you're on Primal or you're on kind of the Twitter corner of LinkedIn, this is really an opportunity for us to take the best of the best in the freedom technology space and begin to introduce it to the broader world.
Yeah, that's awesome. Can you talk? Are you familiar with the venue? I saw that it's at the Fisher Center for Performing Arts. It looks like a really cool venue for people to gather. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Unbelievably so. Yeah, so this is Belmont University's Fisher Center, classical opera style, but a new building. I have not had the pleasure of getting a walkthrough yet. I'm very, very excited to go there, but it's, if you search Fisher Center, you'll see pictures of these like beautiful columns, beautiful kind of European opera house styled location.
Yeah, that's awesome. We'll just take a break here real quick to remind the audience, if you guys would like to come up and ask questions of Rob about the event or Bitcoin Park or anything Bitcoin, please do hit that microphone button in the bottom left. Otherwise, if you're too shy to speak, use that purple pill in the bottom right. You can type your questions, comments, drop a meme in the comments box there. And then guys, lastly, please do share the space. We have a lot of people missing this morning. I think they're all watching Bitcoin climb and refreshing their phones too much. So let's get some more people in here.
I think they might actually be watching the sick new media dropped by Rick Thomas II, also known as Montani, advertising the Bitcoin Veterans Summit. That's probably where most people are tied up, if I had to take a guess.
You're probably right. And also, I don't need to hog the space and all the questions. So Mining Goblin, Neil, BFB, feel free to jump in too. Maybe raise your hand so I can call on you if you do have some questions or comments about what we're talking about this morning. But I did want to ask another question, Rob. Can you tell us, without maybe giving too much away if you're not ready to do so, you guys kind of teased an impressive bunch of speakers. Kathy Wood sounds to be one of them, with her support, but is there anyone else that you would care to announce, or I'll give you that opportunity now if you're able to?
Yeah, well, first off, thank you, because I always get nervous when it's like there's stuff that you can't quite announce yet, but you're excited to. We do have a really, really deep bench. If you check out our website, bitcoinpark.com/imagineif, which is all under, it's all lowercase, You'll be able to see some of the folks that have been confirmed already. So we have confirmed Kathy Wood. Dr. Adam Back is going to be there. Very excited to get him talking about some things that you wouldn't necessarily otherwise hear him talking about. We're going to be joined by Matt Odell. He's coming out to talk to us a little bit more about the freedom tech side of things. And then in addition to that, there's also going to be Dr. Art Laffer, who it is very notable for, if you're not kind of in the world of economics, something called the Laffer curve, which is a really interesting model of taxations and receipts by governments. So very, very privileged to have at least those four people. If you check out the website, you can see the rest of the bench.
Yeah, that's really cool. I also wanted to, at some point during this conversation, I thought it would be cool. You know, you have a background in philosophy and psychological research, and our friend Neil here up on the stage also has, I would say, a philosophy background and has written a book. And, you know, maybe we can reach into some of those deeper topics about Bitcoin and yourself. But can you just tell us a little bit about your background, a little bit more on that with psychological research and philosophy and all of that stuff?
Oh, funny. I appreciate the question. There is like a great little subset of us who while not full-time professional philosophers like the Andrew Baileys, the Bradley Rettlers, the Craig Warmkes, or the Troy Crosses, I think there's an over-representation of folks who have, like, you know, studied philosophy at some point in their background or who have undergraduate degrees or things like that. But yeah, my my background initially, just educationally, came through studying philosophy psychology and out of undergraduate, then working in a program called Teach for America, which was sort of under the affiliated with like the AmeriCorps brand, if you're familiar with that. But the idea is they take kids from universities, toss you in a school somewhere in America, and basically you serve a 2-year term. So over the course of that, then went on to get a master's in education as well. And then from there, I didn't, like all good philosophy majors, had no idea what the hell I was going to do with the rest of my life, and very quickly got involved in the startup space in New Orleans, where I was living at the time, and really loved that. You know, I became a lover and strong advocate of a free system of American capitalism as a way to raise folks out of poverty and support them through their work and learning, which was in contrast to some extent to a lot of the sort of nonprofit industrial complex that I was exposed to in my early days in New Orleans. And it was really with that work, that sort of combination of the educational side of things, that combination of the entrepreneurial, the business side of things, that I started to kind of get curious about Bitcoin. But like I said, you know, I had no idea. I was running a company at the time. I thought, oh, this is cool. I'm making an asymmetric bet with my personal time and my work with this company, but maybe I can do that with my capital as well. And that was kind of what I did. You know, I kind of bought, and I was smart enough to figure out how to self-custody very early on and not mess around with any sort of altcoins or shitcoins. And was very fortunate to have had, you know, Andreas Antonopoulos in my ear, making sure I wasn't going to do anything dumb. And from there, it was really in 2019, 2020, and the, you know, ensuing response by the government to a lot of what was happening with COVID, that the switch was finally clicked on for me, where I started to understand Bitcoin not simply as an asset, as a thing that you kind of bought and held as if I had a bunch of stock certificates tucked away in my safe, but I really understood it as an anti-fragile network. And that was really, you know, the early days of COVID, the trucker protest up in Canada, where it clicked, and it clicked really hard. And I said, okay, well, 2020, Bitcoin mining, it's what sort of keeps the machine operational and allows us to be this anti-fragile responsive system. This is what I'm going to work in. And that was really the impetus and how I found myself kind of deep diving into that aspect of the space.
Yeah, that's awesome. And no doubt Bitcoin has a cultural and societal impact, right? But beyond like that, what things has Bitcoin helped you discover, like as you think about it from like a philosophy, or I guess what things have you noticed changes people, groups of people, individuals, whatever it would be? Like have you noticed any of that stuff? We've kind of been kicking that stuff around on the show the last couple of weeks.
Oh, that's interesting. I wonder if there are like particular topics or recurring themes that you hear. Yeah, I think it's interesting because there's always this moment when you're learning something new, and it's sort of like you're sitting on this intellectual fence, right? And the first time that you kind of pick up and discover Bitcoin, you're kind of climbing up and peering over this intellectual fence where the place that you were, call it the kind of standard status quo fiat world, you're in this moment where you kind of still speak the language of that, but you're now sitting on the fence between that and, you know, this kind of Bitcoin space you've yet to discover. And there's this really brief moment when you can kind of say like, oh, dang, this is actually, in a really, clear kind of way. And then something happens, at least in my mind, this is my perception of what I see happening, which is that once you kind of commit and you fully get over the fence and you go, no, I'm going to play in this yard now, and I'm going to exist in the Bitcoin world, you very quickly stop thinking about the things that are no longer relevant to you. And a lot of that is explicit, right? A lot of that is explicit in the case of like, you know, nobody can stop me from receiving, funds or paying funds. That's amazing when you're still sitting on the fence, but the second you're over the fence, it kind of becomes a new status quo. So it's hard to kind of say there's one thing, so to speak, because so much of it is just kind of baked into the way that you live your daily life. And there's only really that small moment when you're kind of sitting on that intellectual fence that it's obvious what's different. But, you know, in all, I would say, you know, your financial sovereignty, but baked into that financial sovereignty is so much more. You know, it's not just a freedom to transact. It's not just the freedom to custody, to not be censored. You know, it's also the freedom in terms of how you spend your time. If you can put up with the volatility and you've been in through enough cycles that you feel like you have enough of a base, a personal financial base, it also really radically changes the way that you relate to the things that you do when you wake up in the morning. If you wake up and you can't be robbed, anyone could pay you for working an honest day. Nobody can take by hook or by crook anything that you've acquired. You start to change your mindset in terms of, oh, well, do I want to sell myself to the highest bidder, not just for a certain kind of capital, but for a certain kind of, for a certain kind of lifestyle? Or do I want to really think more about the things that give me joy or give me agency? Because I know there are certain things that can't be taken from me because I'm playing a bit of a different game now. I don't know if that answers or introduces, a bit of what you have been considering, but I'd be curious to hear what other people have said.
Yeah. And guys, feel free to jump in. Maybe Neil has some comments. I don't want to put anybody on the spot, but you did mention, you know, well, let me say this first. I know you are a contributor to, Bitcoin Magazine and so some of the things that you've written about, I think you've explored, you know, things from like mining, HVAC innovation type stuff, which we can get into a little bit, but you did key in on one point from the philosophical side of things about, Bitcoin being freedom technology and being able to, like, one of the things we've been talking quite a bit about is, some of the attributes of Bitcoin that make it, especially on yesterday's episode, reliable, and self-custody and privacy are two of the cornerstones of that. And so they're also hot topics in the Bitcoin space right now, with what went on, with, Samurai Wallet and Tornado Cash. And so just wondering, you know, with the summit or maybe your personal thoughts on, self-custody and privacy, like what things are you keying in on or, what might we see out of the summit that can help spur people to move from holding their coins in exchanges or other places, to self-custody and focusing in on maybe some privacy tools?
I think that's such a good question. You know, the power of the summits at Bitcoin Park is that, and somebody at one of the mining and energy summits, expressed it to me really powerfully when we were kind of reconnecting afterwards and hearing how things went, was that they said, you know, I always love to come to these summits because I feel like I know what is going to happen next year. The kinds of conversations that are happening in the room are between folks that are building and creating the kinds of things that are going to build the future that all of us are going to live within. And when you think about that in the context of Imagine If, what I'm personally most excited about is that because we're operating at this kind of capstone level, it's this convergence of freedom technology, AI, Bitcoin, energy, simply getting the right people in the room is a huge level up in the quality of conversation that you get. So in terms of like a predicted outcome, I couldn't even begin to predict what will happen as a result of simply getting the right people in the room. But I have absolute confidence that, you know, getting the right people in the room is the starting point for having those conversations. I think, from a personal sense, one thing that I think everyone should be hyper aware of is that, you know, we talk about growing Bitcoin adoption. And if you assume that Bitcoin adoption grows on a kind of exponential curve, where it grows by X percent a day or X percent a week, over a certain amount of time, the people who have been in the space for three cycles is infinitesimally small infinitesimally small compared to the people who have just gotten in yesterday. The people who got in 2017, that little cohort is infinitesimally small compared to the people who got in 24, 25. And what's the point of this illustration? The point of the illustration is that remembering whenever you got in and thinking how long it took you to really understand what the heck was happening in the space, you have to now look at the world of Bitcoin adoption and say, a substantially larger group of people are going to come in and they're going to have their own extended period of time to learn about Bitcoin. And so what that means is that we can't always jump to the state of the art or the most advanced, the most high tech way of approaching things. We have to kind of meet people where they are. And it's a bit of an uncomfortable truth. You could say, well, I really want people to do this extremely self-sovereign stack. And it's hard to recognize that, well, a giant cohort of people just got into Bitcoin and it's going to take them a little bit of time. And what's more, because that cohort is going to be different than the people who got into Bitcoin 10 years ago, we need to continuously build newer and better tools to educate these people on the foundational principles of Bitcoin, on the importance of self-custody, on the importance of actually buying in certain ways or using in certain ways.
Yeah, it's really good. And Mining Goblin, I see your hand went down, but wanted to give you a chance. I'm sorry for taking up the all of the questions.
No, you're good. I was just going to riff a little bit because the one of my favorite memes that I found within the Bitcoin space was a meme on an artist. He goes by Madex. And it's death to the time thieves. And the beautiful thing, you know, it's like, I don't wish anybody violent death, but the time thieves, the people that the counterfeit class that are able to just print money at will, they are sucking the time from you. Right. And they're feeding themselves that way. And so really it's a slow death by starvation to these time thieves that are doing that. And once you understand that and realize that, you know, totally agree with the waking up in the morning and determining what you do, radically changes when you are moving more towards a Bitcoin standard. And that has second and third order effects, not just for your family, but for your local community. If you find yourself, if you're class of 22, like myself, and you find yourself now having some more liberated time because you're less worried about paying for finishing your house next year or paying for tuition for your kids in the coming years, I'm now able to engage civically, locally in my community, with my church. You know, I'll be going to the local board of supervisors meeting next week to shill bit bonds. And so like the freed capital, you can, or the free time really, right, is the capital, because time is money and money is time, allows you to become an advocate and allows you to educate other people in your circles, because the good vibes will attract people. The people that are struggling, are hurting, you know, when they come to eat your delicious brisket that you cooked, that you bought with sats, that gets cheaper every time you buy it, they're gonna wonder. And you start out as the crazy Bitcoin guy, and eventually people start to ask questions because you're having a better time in life than they are, because your time is freed up to do what you want and pursue the passions and use the gifts that God gave you to make the world a better place.
Oh, I love that. And don't want to stymie the conversation, so let's let Neil go, and then if 23 Skidoo can go, but let's keep Rob in the conversation as well. But that was awesome, Mining Goblin. Neil, go ahead, sir.
Hey, yeah, so when Rob was talking about meeting people where they are, I mean, that's just music to my ears. Like that tangent where Bitcoin world meets Normieville, like that's the front line of the battlefield. And like, how do we seize more territory? You know, like it's developing strategies, you know, and these standard operating procedures that help take that, you know, any person, you know, some, like in the army, you know, it's like, You're training, you would just want, okay, you take any 18-year-old kid, you know, and then it's like, how do you get them to a level of proficiency where they fit in and like understand what's going on operationally and are proficient? And it's just like, you're developing those strategies and those standard operating procedures to take them through that process. And it's like, that's kind of where I really like people that are thinking that way. Like how do we actually onboard, you know, because it's like you're talking about different tools. It's like that's exactly the case. Like I have my idea is kind of like basically anybody that was capable of getting Bitcoin through this like macroeconomic, you know, onslaught, they probably already got it. So like, if you're looking at the total population of the world and you're like, what slice of the pie is this going to be effective for? It's like, it's probably pretty small. So it's like, you know, you're trying to think outside the box. How do we reach these people? Cause it's like, they'll pick it up. Like it's just true. So you're just asking them to open their eyes to recognize what's actually happening to them in their real life, in reality, and then just like act upon it. So it's like, I'm really excited to, you know, I'm still kind of new to Bitcoin world, and just, it makes me really happy that there's already people and organizations like Bitcoin Park already kind of thinking like, how are we going to reach these people? So I'm just, it was really great to listen to you.
Yeah. And I did throw an invite out to the Bitcoin Park handle. If you want to come up just, for more exposure, I'm not going to call on you. You don't have to talk, but, it might be good to come up on stage. 23 Skidoo, did you have some thoughts or a question for Rob?
Yeah, just a couple thoughts. Just the thing that I've been banging on lately as I've moved pretty damn close into living on a Bitcoin standard, meaning that I'm just moved everything in and then trying to use what tools I can, such as prepaid Visa cards and that kind of stuff. But I think it was maybe Bob who was talking earlier that got me inspired. Cause you know, when he was talking about, someone was talking about, you know, think back to when you got into Bitcoin and kind of meeting people where they are. And yeah, that was just kind of the only sentiment I wanted to you know, all the way back when I got into it, late 13, 14, 15, that whole spell. It seemed like there was much more, hope, if you will, that vendors and people were going to use it peer to peer. There actually were more vendors. I remember looking on sites, localbitcoins.com. And so my concern now is, I guess my meandering point is, my concern now is that as new people get into it, I'm kind of bummed that that spirit of Bitcoin is to a large extent not talked about that much anymore. It's more just holding Bitcoin and number go up. And then of course with this show, and I'm not dissing anything, this show, there's a lot of stuff about sovereign and freedom and all that still exists for sure in the hardcore Bitcoiners. But it feels like the peer-to-peer network of an exchange money other than on Nostr is getting lost and hard to revive. And just wondering what Neil thinks about that.
Yeah, Neil or Rob, feel free to jump in on that. You guys have any thoughts?
I've definitely thought the same things that you've thought, 23 Skidoo. Because especially over the last couple of years, you know, myself being kind of class of 2017, I was asking this question of, you know, who's going to start to rage quit when they see people using Bitcoin in the wrong way? Because inevitably, regardless of whatever reason you get into Bitcoin, hopefully it's for principles that are articulated in the white paper. It might not be. You're always kind of hoping that people play with your favorite toy in the same way that you do. You know, if you love your puppy, you want them to love the same things about it. And one function of being this distributed peer-to-peer network is that by default, unfortunately, I don't think we can ever rely on that. And I don't think it was readily apparent through the sort of earliest cypherpunks up to maybe kind of 2017, which is when you started to see kind of an influx of folks who were maybe, you know, a critical mass of degenerate gamblers or people on, you know, Bitcoin markets or trading stuff on Reddit forums and whatnot. There was still a lot of cohesion. You could still kind of fit everybody onto like a single 747, or I guess for the Bitcoin veterans, it'd be a single C-130. You could still kind of get everybody in a single location, right?
Yeah.
And you still kind of understood like, oh, well, like I'm kind of a weirdo in this Austrian economics way, and that guy's kind of a weirdo in like a cypherpunk kind of way, and you know, we get each other on those grounds. And now we're at this point where it may simply be the case where Bitcoinization or hyper-Bitcoinization becomes the use of these quote-unquote default tools. I mean, if you think about the way that the broader mass of the billions of people on the world go about their days, you might kind of parse them ideologically across, you know, where they geographically live. You might parse them by, you know, their sex, you know, the male versus female. You might parse them across their edge, their particular interest set, like their particular personality. There's a whole lot of ways to kind of get into people's heads and try to figure out, you know, what motivates or compels this person. And it's not always necessarily going to be these ideas of, you know, freedom and independence and personal sovereignty. And I don't know if that's ever been the case that the vast majority of humanity has been really dedicated to a kind of like libertarian Austrian economic ideal. You know, I don't know enough. It probably has. I don't know enough about kind of broader history to be able to know, but at least in my lifetime, I don't know that I've really seen that in a broader sense. So where my head is at is where does freedom come by default? In the same way that we currently live in a world that is surveillance by default. You know, I recently went to go rent a carpet cleaner because I have a 12-year-old dog who woke up in the middle of the night and had an accident on a carpet in my dining room. So I've gotten very, very good at using the carpet cleaner. I went to go rent this carpet cleaner from Home Depot, and I see a pamphlet saying that Clear, which is this airport company, as far as I had been aware, this kind of identity verification company, was now being used by Home Depot. And it struck me that, oh, dang, you know, under the existing kind of monetary regime, the organization of the world, this idea of surveillance by default, it actually makes perfect sense to have the same people who pull you to the side and search you at an airport, there are these Clear people, deciding, you know, are you allowed to rent a carpet cleaner and not steal it? So I think what's the converse of that, or what's the freedom money version of that? What kind of tool emerges where it becomes freedom by default? Like that is what I think most of the impact is going to happen through, because I don't necessarily think it's going to happen through everyone becoming a cypherpunk.
Yeah, I understand your point. You know, here's the really ironic twist of Bitcoin, and gotta be careful because I may get jumped on by Bitcoiners, but your point about that people may not necessarily want to use it the same way I want to, and the freedom qualities. Well, the weird thing is that cash, US dollars, forgetting how they're produced, where they come from, and the whole monetary system that they're a part of, but their daily use of cash is actually way more free than Bitcoin in and of itself in a vacuum. And regular everyday people, for every day, all the time, no matter what their political standing, were almost all of them were on board with, I'll just pay you cash at this garage sale. I'll pay you cash for babysitting my kid. I'll pay you cash for this small item. That way neither of us has to deal with taxes and stuff like that. And so Bitcoin, ironically, takes actually more effort than the old paradigm in that one lens anyway, to operate in the same way. And that's what I'm saying is, to some extent, starting to get lost. And as you said, the default of control and surveillance is actually moving in quicker, as I perceive it, because of the power of nation states and the power of corporations and the interest of them to move in on the Bitcoin on and off ramps and the use of it, KYC and whatnot, than the small time developers who are creating these things to make it more like cash, more peer-to-peer, more freedom-oriented. It's no critique of anybody, I understand. I mean, we got the Tornado Cash and the Samurai Wallet facing prison time for creating such tools, but anyway.
Yeah, I won't jump on you because I do think that's a good point. But to make it a fair point, I would say it would be important to add the caveat that after a couple hundred some odd years of a fiat regime evolving, the most useful version of that fiat regime, which is the use of, you know, peer-to-peer cash. And of course, we're assuming that nobody is debasing your currency in the background, which is, you know, fundamentally the problem that Bitcoin is solving for. I would say that, yeah, that definitely has utility, that has use case, that has functionality in excess to the current state of Bitcoin, which is less than 20 years old. I think to be fair, you should say, okay, could we compare the first 20 years of cash usage against the first 20 years of Bitcoin? I think that would be a very different story. So to be totally fair, I think your point is totally legitimate. I would just be super conscious of the time frame that we're looking at given the age of the particular technology that we're using. Because, you know, 10 years from now, I would hope that we are all paying with some kind of obfuscated, non-custodial and totally censorship resistant version of, maybe a layer two, whether it's an ARC or a Lightning or some other kind of, you know, cashew, some federated mint or something like this.
Yeah, absolutely agree. Absolutely agree. So yeah, I'm not trying to, I'm being a bit of a devil's advocate, but I'm also being true to my heart, to the, what I'm feeling. And if I had the skills of a programmer, that's where I'd be, is creating ways for this to be easier, obfuscated peer-to-peer payment systems at the risk of going to prison, sadly.
Yeah, I think, you know, if we can dive into that probably on another space, because I do think it's super important to understand what did just occur yesterday with Tornado Cash and also the fallout from Samurai Wallet and their plea being changed to guilty. We'll have to see I think one important thing, and I know this is a little off topic for today, but we'll have to see what the outcome is of their appeals. Because I do think, not in the Samurai case, but in the Tornado Cash case, it sounds like there will be an appeal. And so I'm hopeful for that. Neil, I did see your hand. Wanted to continue the discussion after that brief timeout. You have your hand up, sir. Go ahead.
Yeah. The thing that I kind of my take on kind of that freedom stuff is, I mean, it's like there's lots of things that are very important, but we have to just remember, like, the order in which they're addressed. You know, first things are first. And when we're talking about layers of this protocol stack, like we have to develop it, you know, in that order. And so I don't really get too worried. I completely acknowledge and understand the valid, you know, concerns for, you know, I mean, just countless, you know, privacy or, you know, just the usefulness or how much we can, you know, we can buy in our peer-to-peer, how easy it is to just, you know, send somebody, you know, 200 sats, you know, just like at a garage sale. Like, those are completely important and valid, but it's just kind of like, I think solidifying that we're still like just getting the base layer just rock solid and people adopt it on that level. And like, you know, all the stuff that the developers are doing with the layer twos and threes, I mean, it's like, it's only going to get better. I mean, I would think that the Bitcoin community, you know, in 10, 20 years or whatever, has developed these, you know, layers where they're even more efficient and even more easy, you know, who maybe we have something in our, you know, we have a little chip in our brain and we just zap, you know, sats to each other that way. Like, I don't, who knows, like, how they could take this, but, you know, like the freedom as that principle is just like, yeah, anybody can do whatever they want with freedom money and you have to be okay with that. But the thing that comforts me is just that the incentives are arranged as such that anybody that tries to cheat the system gets punished, like economically. Like that's what kind of gives, that's like my whoopee, my warm fuzzy idea that I hold on to when I'm like, well, it's just free. Anybody can do anything. It's like, yes, but there's certain behaviors come with, you know, the way the incentives are, certain behaviors are punished and come with, you know, a cost. So like that's what makes me like feel like this is actually going to keep heading in the right direction. Even if it's, you know, the volatility, sure, maybe we take a left turn, right turn, whatever, but we'll still stay mainly on course moving towards, you know, a better world.
Yeah. You gave me an idea. I'm getting on a domain register and getting brainzaps.com. That was really good. Rob, did you have thoughts on the on Neil's comments or 23skidoo? Feel free to jump in.
No, I think it was wonderfully illustrated.
Great. So let's switch topics a little bit. We can jump back to anything you guys want to talk about. Really take it anywhere you want. My job's just to keep it interesting and the conversation flowing. So tell me a little bit. We'll get personal a little bit before we end, Rob. Feel free to share or shut this down, but your handle on X is Bikes and Bitcoin. So you're clearly passionate about Bitcoin. We've heard a lot of that stuff, but want to just reach into some personal stuff. Tell us about cycling, your passion for that. How do the two worlds intersect for you, and maybe how does it relate to Bitcoin Park?
I have a, well, first off, I thank you for bringing, I'm happy to answer that. The second off is I have a terrible, terrible admission to make, which is that at least I'm based in the Colorado Front Range. So we get these beautiful summers that you can get up in the mountains and do all kinds of riding and biking and hiking and whatnot. But my terrible admission is that, I have not actually gotten out for good, proper training bike rides this season. All of my biking has been with my toddler attached to the little tow behind, dragging her to and from daycare, taking her into town so that I could take her to, you know, little ice cream dates with dad. But yeah, that was the handle. If you look at my Twitter, you see I joined like 2020, I think. It was, and I wish I had discovered Twitter honestly years before, because it would have been a lot more engaging, just mentally in the years leading up, and probably would have been a lot more educated had I done so a little bit earlier. But at the time it wasn't just bicycling. It was bicycling as well as, motorcycle. So out in Colorado, you get these just like gorgeous opportunities to do tons of road cycling. You can climb the canyons out here. You can go, you know, there's loads of trails all around these communities. From my house, I can either, you know, make it into the city of Denver totally by trails. I can make it into the foothills. I can go climb into the mountains. I can go north if I want to go to Fort Collins. If I go south, you know, there's all these like really beautiful infrastructure opportunities. And, you know, there's something interesting, which is like the broader point, kind of cycling tied into, which is this idea of like, training, or this idea of like, proof of work. And there's one thing that I really love about physical exercise, right? Which is that, it's just so incredibly fair. Like a track meet is just so insanely fair, because there's only two things that you're really competing against, you know, notwithstanding the people that you're lined up against. You're competing against a distance, and you're competing against a time. And that I think once you start to, when you start to appreciate that in a way that's not like emotional, you don't turn training into some like grand epic or something that weighs heavy on you. And you can really strip it down to, you know, these are the things, these are the standards. The standard is the distance. The standard is the time. And everything that I personally do there in the middle is me. That's me. That's what I get to take ownership of. I think that's a really empowering mindset or philosophy to have. And it's actually something that, that makes us as humans a lot more powerful than a Bitcoin miner. If you're trying to compare proof of work or work, human work compared to mining work, the biggest difference between those two things is that mining work is stateless. So it's instantaneous is another way to say that. If I am hashing, I am contributing to the network. In some sense, right? I'm trying to solve the next block. If I am not hashing, I do not exist. And that's really powerful, because it makes the system as a whole, the total aggregate of the millions and millions of miners, anti-fragile and very responsive to the world. But a miner, a single miner, is totally different compared to a human. You know, a human, the work that you put in is additive. And I think this is, we talk about, you know, Bitcoin as a system is hope. You can't compare it directly to kind of proof of work in the mining sense, because the work that you put in as an individual, it accrues, it's additive, it's educational. You know, you learn something by doing the work. You don't necessarily know the total outcome or when you're going to kind of strike that final moment of discovery, So similar to Bitcoin, you don't necessarily know kind of the moment that you're going to have your great insight or unlock something. But totally dissimilar to Bitcoin is that you are not a stateless machine. You know, you are the aggregate of all of the work and all of the effort and all of the time that you have put into learning and working. And that's what I really like about, you know, obviously, you know, cycling specifically, but the whole broad spectrum, whether it's cycling or it's running or it's lifting. That's one thing that I think we should, as much as we're always trying to humanize Bitcoin, that's something that we should always claim as something that's distinctly human, something that we should lock into ourselves.
Yeah, I really like how you put that all together. It made me think about things a little bit differently, certainly, and hopefully it did for the audience too. It's really good. And yeah, thanks for sharing on the bikes side of your handle. One other thing I wanted to make sure, and feel free. Oh, BFP, I see your hand. Go ahead. You can take it anywhere you want it.
I had two things. One was the referencing we're not using Bitcoin like cash, and that's because of Gresham's law, and that's just a quick point. It's good money drives out bad money. But the question I had for Rob was, I see in his bio he wrote the Mining Almanac, and I was wondering if he had any other good books, because I'm sure his book is great, on mining that he might recommend that got him to where he is. Or I guess I can speak directly to you. I don't know why I'm speaking in the third person, but yeah, do you have any recommendations for a good mining book for the lay person like myself? All I have is this real basic one that I got. It's the Bitcoin Mining Handbook by Brains, and it was all right, but it's kind of small and not real robust.
Sure. Yeah, well, that's a great series. You know, I was going to recommend Brains has a whole series of books that if you catch them at a conference, they hand them out abundantly. So I would always recommend grabbing the Brains books that they have. I'll tell you, there, specifically the reason why I wrote the book was because, you know, I am not an engineer. I'm not a developer. I'm not a shadowy supercoder. I really came into mining by just beating my head against the wall and trying to learn what I could and make sense of it in the context that I understood it. And so I wrote the book with that in mind, which is that this thing on the surface just looked insanely complicated. And I don't know that the most valuable contribution that I could make would be to give somebody something super complicated to understand. So I entered with this mindset of, you know, my goal with the book is to make mining as apprehensible to the lay person. And if you DM me, if you're in the US, I'm happy to shoot you a copy. Really the goal was to say, okay, I don't want you to have to look at code. I want you to start from kind of a first principles basis. And in mining, the first principles basis is really the machine. And so if you build up from the machine, because it's easy to think, you know, a machine, I hold it in my hand, I have like a mental picture of what this thing is, then I can start to understand the elements of it conceptually. So by starting with the machine, you can start to move into the landscape of, okay, well, how do I run a machine? Well, I need three things. I need to have some kind of internet connection. I have to talk to a node. I have to talk to the network. I have to have some kind of cooling. So thermodynamically, I have to be connected to the world, obviously, in some way, because the machine has to run. It has to consume electricity and shed heat as it works. And then I have to have some kind of connection to electricity. I have to have some kind of grid connection, or not grid connection, but I have to be by a source of energy. And so I really wanted to explain Bitcoin mining from the perspective of a first principles layperson, without starting you immediately into this is the hash price and this is how you model your break evens and this is the way that you would set up using a container, using these PDUs, and you very quickly lose people in that kind of way. So there's loads of kind of niche or more technical resources, Brains being some of the best in the game, and I love their work. But I really wrote the book with that in mind, which is that it's very hard to find more of a first principles layperson explanation of just what the heck is going on in Bitcoin mining.
Yeah, that's really good. Can you talk a little bit about your work at Riot? I know you've written about all kinds of things, but one of the things I saw that you key in on is Bitcoin mining's potential to reduce waste and integrate it into like home systems, like water heaters, maybe pool heaters, other things. So can you just kind of, before we get down to the end here, can you talk about that a little bit?
Oh, sure. Happy to. Yeah. So in terms of like specific work in the mining industry, I was doing kind of very early days, home mining write-ups, which were looking into ways to either run machines in your home or ways to utilize the heat. And this was kind of 2020 to 2022. And then a little bit thereafter got into, started a company up in Wyoming with a couple of partners that was a small facility. So up to a megawatt and a half, which is about 300 some odd machines, depending on what you're running. And the goal there was to set up a self-mining and hosting facility, with a focus on privacy and personal sovereignty. So that was a really interesting challenge because we were working to make systems as open and accessible as possible. And we were also generating a bunch of research looking into things like, you know, how do you, we didn't have good data on underclocking at the time. So we did a study on underclocking. We did a study on, you know, physical setup of machines. How do you physically orient them in a mine? We did a study on, can you put sorts of, ancillary mechanisms on machines to improve airflow at the machine level? So that was kind of early days research stuff. And then that tied into my work at Riot, which was now instead of on the order of hundreds of machines, on the order of hundreds of thousands of machines across various 100 megawatt buildings, going in and building the systems by which we could actually analyze the operations of those facilities and try to understand these problems from a way, way larger scale and a way more dynamic scale.
Yeah, awesome. Thank you for that. And before we go to kind of the last question and the wrap up, one thing I like to do from time to time when we have guests on at the end of the show is, I know this completely doesn't flow with the topic, but what do you think Bitcoin's price is going to be by the end of the year? Just we're not going to hold you to it, but we're just curious. What are your thoughts?
I'm literally the worst person on earth to ask about that. Like, I am the guy who is definitely not going to trade Bitcoin, cannot, like, if I get a lump sum of cash, I have to just like buy it now and forget about it, and just ignore it. Or I have to just like dump the cash and just daily DCA, through like a river account or something, because, I am so bad at making any sort of prediction on that front. And it's hard to say because it does seem like we're in a pretty different price regime compared to where we were, even 4 or 5 years ago. So I don't know. I'm becoming sympathetic to just kind of the slow, eternal grind up. And I think that might just kind of be what we do for the next few years. You know, they say gold went on a 10-year bull run after the ETFs were approved. So why would it be dissimilar to think that, Bitcoin would do something so different? So I would definitely be bullish on the idea of up only, but remember you're also talking to like the eternal bull who has to just DCA and forget about it because he's too emotional. I don't know, maybe scratching 200K somewhere, like, high hundreds, low 200K.
Yeah, that's an awesome answer. Thanks for giving the thought process behind it too. Really like that. Okay, so what's a call to action for our listeners as we wrap up the show? Tell us how people can get involved with this summit, Imagine If Summit, and what's like the best way to get in touch with you, the summit, Bitcoin Park, all that stuff.
Oh, sure. So we're super accessible on, you know, all the major channels. Whether it's LinkedIn, whether it is X, whether it's Primal, you can always feel free to ping me directly on X. Best things to do if you're curious about Bitcoin Park, just go to bitcoinpark.com and you can learn a little bit about what we're up to. If you want to learn about the Imagine If Summit, all you do is bitcoinpark.com/imagineif, all lowercase, all one word. We would love to have you, come and join us for this inaugural event because it's going to be pretty special. And yeah, outside of outside of that, the biggest thing is, you know, find a local meetup, find a local community that you can get involved with. And that will undoubtedly be the best point of entry for your own personal learning. And then keep your eyes open to what we are doing kind of broader in the digital space. We have two things that we do at Bitcoin Park in the digital world. One is called stream.bitcoinpark.com. And this is almost like an ESPN crawl meets like a Drudge Report, where we curate all of the, most valuable signal throughout the course of the day and aggregate it there in a single website. That's stream.bitcoinpark.com. And then the second one, if you like to sign up for email lists, is bitcoinpark.substack.com. And if you join that, we have a daily newsletter. We give you 4 bytes every single day, 2 minutes of reading, with the idea that you can stop the doom scroll. You can just receive an email and then you can get back to the work that you have to do.
Yeah, I love that. Thanks so much for coming on today. Would love to have you back again sometime to dive deeper into some of these topics, but really appreciate you sharing all of your wisdom, your experience. And, I'm excited to see what Bitcoin Park can do. There's, so many, I think the ethos is great. I think all these events that you guys host are amazing. The, grassroots type stuff is where this freedom money is really going to work. I think we see a lot of financialization going on, a lot of people adopting it through ETFs and not treating it like the freedom money that it is, that is described in the white paper. And so what you guys are doing is really pushing forward freedom tech. And I think more people need to pay attention to it. So thanks again, Rob, for coming on and sharing with us this morning.
Yeah, thank you. The feeling is mutual, and we absolutely cannot wait to have you guys out in Nashville at the park. We're super excited for what we're going to be facilitating there.
Yeah, awesome. And just a reminder to everybody, the Imagine If Summit is occurring in September. Let's see, it's September 19th and 20th in Nashville,
That's right.
Tennessee. If you're interested, please follow Rob up here, follow the Bitcoin Park handle, but you can also go to bitcoinpark.com to get more information, grab your tickets, volunteer. Maybe, I don't know if you guys are still accepting speaker requests, but it's only about a month away. So
that's right.
You guys go check that out right away. Are you accepting other presentations? Do you guys need more volunteers?
We are accepting volunteers, and we are accepting proposals for presentations, though the schedule is the schedule's getting tight right now, but we can always fit in high quality stuff.
Awesome. Really appreciate it. And again, love to have you back anytime. Maybe we can have you back after the summit just to discuss how it went. Maybe some of the highlights and things like that. But always interested to hear what Bitcoin Park's doing. And, Rob, thanks so much for getting up early this morning and hanging out with us. That's a wrap though, guys. Do want to thank everybody who joined us today, all of our speakers, everybody who had us on in the background. And please make sure you follow everybody up here on stage. And that's all we have for today. Again, want to wish you a wonderful Thursday. We'll do it again tomorrow at 10 a.m. Eastern. Please do join us. And remember, not to shitcoin.
Thank you so much, guys.
Shitcoining is very bad for you if you didn't know.
People that use fiat currency as a store of value, we call them poor. We call them poor.